Chapter 14. Calomus announced his Jedi plan and his official candidacy at mid-morning before an army of holojournalists in the lobby of the building that the Mon Calamari had donated for the Senate's use. Luke stood quietly behind Cal amid a group of friends and supporters, not wanting to attract attention. But when Cal called for questions, at least half were directed to Luke, and Cal finally called Luke to his side. "Are you and the Jedi supporting Counselor Omis's candidacy?" he was asked. "I hope to be able to work with any chief of state," Luke said, "but I'm supporting Counselor Omis's plan for restoring the Jedi Council." The holojournalist was skeptical. "So you're saying you could work with Fior Rodan if he wins the election?" "I will work with Counselor Rodan if he will work with me," Luke smiled. "My impression, though, is that he'd rather not." Laughter trickled lightly through the crowd. "Rodan says the Jedi Council is your means of seizing power," someone else called. Cal stepped to the front. "May I answer that one?" he said. "Let me point out that if Luke Skywalker was after power, he wouldn't have needed to work with politicians like me or Fior Rodan. He wouldn't have needed to destroy the Death Star or fight Emperor Palpatine hand to hand or help his sister found the New Republic. All Master Skywalker would have needed to do would have been to join his father, Darth Vader, at the right hand of the Emperor, and in that case his power would be unlimited, and you and I and everyone here would either be dead or enslaved." Cal scowled at the crowd, and there was a touch of anger in his voice. "This isn't some little jumped-up lobbyist or politician we're talking about. This is Luke Skywalker. There isn't a single person in the New Republic who doesn't owe him a profound debt of gratitude. So if anyone suggests that Luke Skywalker is involved in some kind of shabby power play, I'd suggest that person not only can't read history, but is incapable of reading human character." There was actually applause at that, and not just from Cal's supporters. "I'd like to thank you for your words on my behalf," Luke said later, after the meeting had broken up. Cal grinned. "Did you like the hint of anger? I thought I judged that pretty well." Luke was surprised. "You were faking that?" "Oh, no, it was real enough," Cal said. "I just let it show enough to get the top spot in tonight's holonews." He rubbed his chin. "The question is, did I let it show enough?" Luke left Cal Omis pondering this and other political questions and shuttled up to the New Republic Fleet Command Annex, where Vergere was still undergoing interrogation. Jason had been released after a few hours' debriefing, but the fleet showed every inclination to keep Vergere indefinitely. Luke didn't necessarily think that was a bad thing. "She's given us reams of material," said Intelligence Director Neely Kirka. "It'll take us hundreds of hours to process it all. None of it contradicts what we already know. But then, if she were a bogus defector controlled by the enemy, it wouldn't, would it?" Neely Kirka seemed amused. "She's also eaten about twice her weight. I've never seen such an appetite." "If you had to eat Yuuzhan Vong cooking for 50 years, you'd be hungry for our food, too." Luke asked the Temarian if he could speak to Vergere himself, and Neely Kirka was agreeable. "Any information you can get out of her," he said with a wave of his hand. He found Vergere in her cell, squatting on a stool and watching a holotransmission from the planet, a news program that featured Luke and Cal Omis. "Incapable of reading human character," Cal was saying. Vergere waved the holo to silence as Luke entered. "In my time," she said, "a Jedi Master would not have intervened so with the Senate and an election." "In your time," Luke said, "it wouldn't have been necessary." Vergere accepted this with a graceful bob of her unlikely head. Luke gathered up his robe and sat cross-legged on the chair before her. He calmed himself. He was trying not to dislike Vergere, though he had very, very good reason to. "Out with it," he thought. "I've spoken to Jason about his captivity," he said. "Your apprentice bore it well," Vergere said. "You are to be congratulated." Anger swirled in Luke's heart. Exhaling a deliberate, slow breath, he banished it. Perhaps Jason didn't have to bear it at all, he said. He said that you led him into captivity no less than 3 times. Rogier's head bobbed. I did, she confirmed. He was tortured, Luke said. Tortured to the point of death. And you led him to it. You could have escaped with him earlier than you did, yes. Why? He asked. Rogier held herself still, as if listening intently to a voice that Luke couldn't hear. It was necessary that your apprentice learn certain lessons, she said. Lessons in betrayal. Luke tried to keep the anger out of his voice. Torture, helplessness, slavery, degradation, pain. Those naturally, Rogier said blandly. But chiefly, he had to be brought to the edge of despair, and then over it. Her tilted eyes gave Luke an intense, searching gaze. You taught him well, but it was necessary for him to forget every lesson you gave him by showing that none of the gifts you gave him could help him. Necessary? Luke's outrage finally broke through his reserve. Necessary for what? Or for who? Rogier tilted her head and looked at him. Necessary for my plans, of course, she said. Who gave you? Luke suppressed his anger. Who gave you the right? A right that is given is as useless as a virtue that is given, Rogier said. Rights are used, or they have no value, just as virtues must be performed. I took the right to lie to your apprentice, to betray him, to torment him, and enslave him. Her piebald feathers fluffed, then smoothed again. A shrug. I also take upon myself the consequences. If you, as his master, wish to punish me, so be it. Was there a point to this? Luke gazed at her. Other than exercising your rights, I mean. Rogier nodded. Of course, young master, she said. Jason Solo had to be bereft of friends, of relatives, of teachers and knowledge and the force and everything that could help him. He had to be reduced to nothing, or rather to himself only. And then he had to act purely out of himself, out of his own inner being. In that state of complete disinterest, everything else having failed him, he had no choice but to be himself, to choose and to act. Her voice turned thoughtful. I regret the means, of course, but I used what I had at hand. The same inner state could have been reached more gently, given time and opportunity, but neither were at hand. I tricked the Yu Zhan Vong into preserving his life and inflicting the embrace of pain. I made the Yu Zhan Vong my instrument. She gave a little dry cough, or perhaps it was a laugh. Perhaps that was my greatest accomplishment. Rogier's words resonated in Luke's mind, and as he followed their reasoning, he found his anger abating, if only by virtue of his abstraction. And the point of this? He asked. The slanted eyes closed and Rogier's body relaxed, as if she were entering meditation. Surely you know the answer, young master, if you know Jason Solo at all. Humor me, Luke said. Spell it out. The avian's eyes remained closed. Her voice seemed to come from far away. Once, or so the story that Jason told me suggests, you had your own props similarly knocked away. Deprived of help, of hope, of weapons, blasted by the Emperor's force lightning. What did you have then? You had only yourself. You were made to choose between the Emperor's path and your own. I had no choice, Luke said. Exactly. You had no choice. And even with annihilation staring you in the face, you chose to remain true to yourself. A hint of satisfaction entered Rogier's tone. Likewise, it was necessary to reduce Jason to himself, in order that, with every other door closed to him, he might embrace his destiny. Destiny. For the second time in 2 days, the word rose in connection with Jason. And deep in his bones, in complete inner certainty, Luke knew that Vergere was right, that somewhere in the complex weavings of fate, Jason had a special place. The previous evening, over dinner in the small apartment, Luke and Mara had asked Jason about his experience at the hands of the Yuuzhan Vong. At first, Jason had been reluctant to speak at all, saying it was a large subject. But after the first few questions, he spoke matter-of-factly of his imprisonment, the way Vergere had repeatedly betrayed him into the hands of the enemy after somehow taking away his connection to the Force. Mara and Luke had glanced at each other in growing horror. But Jason had shown no resentment of Vergere. In fact, he had spoken of her with profound respect and admiration. Luke hadn't understood this until later that evening, when he and Mara were alone, and Mara quietly reminded him how hostages sometimes grew strangely attached to their captors. Sometimes captives even grew to love their warders, particularly if the warder was skilled enough in manipulating people. Vergere, old and experienced in serving her own agenda, had been able to manipulate young Jason's growing psyche. And so Luke, angry, certain he knew what had happened, had traveled to Vergere's cell to confront her with her actions. But somehow it hadn't quite come out the way he'd anticipated. "And what do you know of Jason's destiny?" Luke asked. Vergere pondered a moment before answering. "I believe that Jason is intimately connected with the fate of the Yuuzhan Vong," she answered. Of all things, Luke had not expected that. "He can destroy them?" he asked. "Destroy them, save them, transform them." The tilted eyes opened, gazed expressionlessly into Luke's. "Perhaps all three." "Can he open them to the Force?" Luke asked. "I don't know if that's possible." Luke felt bitterness poison his heart. "Then the Yuuzhan Vong will remain outside." Vergere's head tilted. "That bothers you?" Luke blinked. "Yes, of course. The Force is life. All life is the Force. But the Yuuzhan Vong are outside the Force. So are they outside life as well? What do you think?" "I think it was easier dealing with enemies from the dark side." Luke looked narrowly at Vergere. "I also think you're very good at interrogation. This conversation started with me asking the questions." "If you didn't want me to ask questions," Vergere said, "you should have explained that at the beginning." Her piebald body stirred on her stool. "I've been answering question after question ever since I arrived, and I'm tired of it. So if you insist that the only questions in this room must come from you, then I decline to answer them." "Very well." Luke rose to his feet. Her head craned after him on its odd little neck. "But I will ask one more question before you leave," she said. "You may answer it or not, as you like."
"Ask," Luke said.
Her eyes blinked slowly. "If the Force is life," she said, "and the Yuuzhan Vong are alive, and you cannot see them in the Force, then is the problem with the Yuuzhan Vong, or is it with your perceptions?" Luke, choosing not to answer, nodded politely and left.
"Tricky, isn't she?"
Idar Neely Kirka asked a few moments later. "You heard?" Luke asked.
"Of course. Everything in that room is recorded."
The Temarian inclined his head.
"What do you suggest we do with her?"
"Hold her here," Luke said, "and keep asking her questions." Neely Kirka smiled.
"Just what I planned, Master Skywalker."
Mon Calamari, goggle eyes gleaming in the floodlights, swam easily past Cal Omis's window. The scent of mildew in the room was greater than ever. Mara looked up as Luke entered.
"Vergere?" she said.
"It's complicated," Luke said. "I'll explain later." He looked at Cal Omis, who was sharing a hasty meal with Mara. "What news from the Senate?" Cal swallowed the mouthful he'd been chewing and said, "The Senate had a vote this afternoon. I got 28%.
And Rodan, 35.
And Kola Kwis got 10%, Mara added. And Talam Ranth, 18. Po got 3 votes total, though he sent a message saying that the vote was illegal and that he was still chief of state. The rest of the votes were abstentions, or scattered among half a dozen others.
Luke and Mara had decided that, of the two of them, Mara would be one who would work more openly with Cal and his campaign. Luke had other business with Jason and Vergere and the Jedi, and Mara could move more openly among the politicians and lobbyists than he could. Luke joined the others at the table, and Cal amiably pushed a bowl of Giju stew in his direction.
"Where's Trebak?" Luke asked.
"Talking to Kola Kwis," Cal said. "By now it must be clear to Kola that he can't win, so we need to find out what it would take for him to drop out of the race and endorse me."
"I'm sure Rodan's asking him the same thing," Mara said.
"And then we ask the same thing of Talam Ranth," Cal continued, "though I don't suppose Talam is ready to answer yet. He'll want a few more floor votes first, just to show what a valuable ally he could be."
"What's he likely to want?"
"A place on the advisory council, certainly," Cal said. "Plus he'll want places in the government for his friends. He's always been very serious about controlling patronage."
Luke finished his bite of stew and spoke. "In order to control patronage, there has to be a government for him to control patronage in. If the government falls apart in the meantime..." Cal shrugged.
"Talam wants what he wants. If we start giving him speeches about patriotism and duty, he'll think we're trying to put something over on him. He's the sort who thinks that patronage is the whole point of government."
"In that case," Luke said, sighing, "you may as well point out that if the war goes on, his people will gain access to a lot of military contracts."
Cal grinned. "We'll make a politician of you yet."
"I hope not," Luke said.
Cal reached across the table for a data pad. "It's Fjor's supporters that worry me," he tapped the display. "I've been looking at the people who voted for him, and if I were to make a mental list of the members of the Senate who would want a truce with the Yuuzhan Vong, or even a surrender, I'd find quite a number of them among Fjor's supporters."
"Senator Sneakaway," Luke said, with a significant look at Mara.
"Senator Scramblefree..."
Cal frowned at the data pad.
"I count at least a dozen senators who either ran away from Coruscant during the fighting or found reason to flee before the fighting started, and some of them are influential."
"Rodan told me that he didn't trust the Yuuzhan Vong to keep a truce," Luke said.
"He repeated it publicly this afternoon," Mara said.
"But can he hold out against his own supporters?" Cal said. "When the people he depends on for his position tell him they want peace with the Yuuzhan Vong, how can he resist?"
"I don't understand," Mara said. "Rodan was brave during the fight, maybe even heroic. How can he associate with these people?"
"Some people don't question the folks who give them what they want," Cal said, and then his long face creased in a sly smile. "I haven't exactly made my own supporters fill out a questionnaire either."
Luke finished his stew. "We need a government soon," he said, "and one the military can respect, because the military won't hold still for a surrender or a truce. And then we'll have a military government that won't hold any legitimacy other than what they acquire at Blaster Point."
Cal looked serious. "Mara told me what you saw this afternoon. I agree, we need a government soon. A parliamentary system like ours is inefficient in certain ways, but it's what we're stuck with."
"The question is," Mara said, "does the military understand that?"
It was a question to which none of them had the answer. Luke and Mara found Jason in the suite when they returned. Jason sat on the floor in a meditation pose, and Luke could feel the force surrounding him, swirling in great eddies through the boy's body, cleansing, healing, strengthening and restoring. Jason's eyes opened as soon as Luke and Mara stepped into the apartment, and he smiled.
"The intelligence people are done with me, for the present," Jason said. I think there'll be a while with Verger, though. I spoke with her myself, Luke said.
Jason's smile broadened. What did you think? I think she's not simple.
Mara had scowled at Jason's pleased reaction to the mention of Verger, but she put the frown away and sat next to Jason.
I have to wonder about her loyalties, she said.
They're not simple either, Jason said. She's very harsh sometimes.
Mara's mouth twisted, and Luke knew why. Because his own insides were queasing at the thought of torture. He swallowed back a bitter surge of stomach acid and dropped cross-legged to the floor in front of Jason. Jason looked at him.
I'm still your apprentice, Master Skywalker, he said. Do you have any assignments for me?
Harsh, Luke thought. Whatever he was going to be, he wasn't going to be Verger.
He smiled. A very difficult assignment, Jason, he said. You're to take a vacation.
Jason was surprised. What kind of vacation? He asked.
Luke almost laughed. Whatever kind you like, he said. You've been through a lot, and I want you to take the time to think about it. Many of your friends are here. I want you to reconnect with them. Meditate as you were doing. Try to discern what it is that the Force wants for you, if anything, and whether it's what you want for yourself.
Jason tilted his head in curiosity.
You'd give me that option? You of all people, Luke said, should know that you've always had that option.
He looked into Jason's solemn eyes.
I want you to get beyond what I want for you, beyond what Verger wants, beyond any of us. I want you alone with Force, a dialogue with just the two of you, alone.
Harsh, Mara said. Luke could feel her muscles tense.
Days and days of torture. Harsh.
They were alone in bed, lying nested like spoons, Mara in the curve of Luke's body. Jason was presumably asleep in the next room, and they conversed in low tones, so as not to be overheard.
She claimed she had good reasons for what she did, Luke said. And they sounded plausible if, well, harsh.
Mara looked thoughtful. She helped heal me with her tears. Perhaps a gesture of compassion, perhaps a cold-hearted calculation to pave her way to a defection, or should I say a re-redefection to our side.
She tortured Jason, but she brought him back,
and she collaborated in the deaths of hundreds of billions of citizens of the New Republic, Luke said. The reasons she gives are, perhaps, adequate, or perhaps she is simply a being with absolutely no conscience and an agenda of her own.
Mara's eyes turned hard. We've got to get Jason out from under her influence.
That's why I told Jason to take time off and to reconnect with his friends, Luke said. I can't order him not to feel a connection to Verger, but I can tell him to connect to all the parts of his life that aren't Verger.
Mara nodded. Good idea.
Whatever may have happened to Jason while he was gone, he's more mature than he was, more balanced, and more centered than ever in the Force.
Mara bit her lip.
I agree. Not everything that happened to him was negative. After Jason's gotten his bearings back, I'll send him on a mission. After he's had a chance to think and regain his balance, he'll need to reconnect with his job.
Yes.
She hesitated. That may be hard, but it's necessary.
I spoke this morning of Jason's having a special destiny, Luke said.
Verger thinks he has one as well.
Mara looked at him over her shoulder.
Maybe you'd better tell me what she said.